July 1942. A 17-year-old boy with dreams of flying arrives at Chemnitz Barracks, his half-French, half-German heritage as divided as the continent itself. Though his hopes of joining the Luftwaffe are quickly dashed, his spirits remain buoyant. There's something almost innocent about those early days, marching through autumn forests, singing with an atrocious French accent, sunbathing on slate roofs of a fairy tale Polish castle during training. How could anyone know what waited across the horizon? The Eastern Front beckons with its siren call, and like countless young men before him, he answers without understanding the price. The journey to Russia becomes the first confrontation with war's stark reality. In Kharkov, twisted metal shrouds peek through snow, marking fallen soldiers. News of Stalingrad's collapse creates fissures among the men. Veterans grow defeatist, while the young burn with determination. When ordered to resupply positions along the Don River, true combat arrives like a thunderbolt. Pneumonia, frostbite, and gangrene claim comrades daily. Some wander off in despair, never to return. Others, crying for mothers through the night, end their suffering with a bullet. How quickly the human spirit can be crushed when facing the impossible. The first combat experience shatters all expectations. A guide's casual warning about enemy fire precedes abandonment in chaos. In the trenches, Soviet weapons create a terrifying orchestra. A direct hit destroys their position, and a soldier dissolves like a scarecrow, his helmet visor buried in his chin. This initial death remains sharp in memory, while countless others merge into a vast nightmare of mutilations and terror-frozen faces. The horrific becomes commonplace. Decomposing bodies and mangled corpses turn routine. During the Don River retreat, endless columns of defeated infantry pass by, their expressions more telling than any official report. Stalingrad's fall unleashes an overwhelming Soviet advance. An air attack claims Ernst, struck by machine gun fire. Watching him bleed out reveals war's cold indifference to friendship. After burying him with improvised tools and marking his grave with a French note, the retreat continues. Even the wounded must walk, and abandoning the dying becomes another harsh necessity of war. Volunteering for the elite Grossdeutschland Division promises escape, but leads to burial duty at Kharkov instead. Witnessing prisoners killed with grenades forces the realization that German cruelty matched Russian atrocities. Survival strips away humanity. The training's brutality transforms recruits. They dig trenches as tanks roll overhead, learn to attack tanks with Panzerfaust weapons at 5-yard range, and face the Hundehütte punishment hut, where soldiers are chained and forced to eat like dogs. By mid-July 1943, these hardened soldiers face their test at Belgorod. Waves of Soviet troops create unprecedented carnage, explosions, screams, and gore, painting a hellish landscape. After 3 days of near-continuous combat with minimal sleep, an almost supernatural strength emerges, enabling them to fight beyond normal human limits. By autumn 1943, general withdrawal begins as the front collapses. Captain Westrideau sustains morale by visiting bunkers and standing watch with his men. "Germany is a great country," he tells them under wavering lamplight. "Our difficulties are immense, but our system is as good as the slogans on the other side." His sincerity guides them through the chaos. The retreat becomes desperate at the Dnieper River. Pursued relentlessly, thousands die on the Ukrainian plain, fighting despite knowing that, for every 100 Russians killed, hundreds more would appear the next day. The river crossing turns nightmarish as inadequate boats struggle to transport 5 divisions. Men stand neck-deep supporting makeshift landing stages. When Soviet tanks emerge from the fog, their headlights cut a bloody furrow through the packed crowd of terrified men. After days of waiting, boarding even a splintered raft feels like salvation. The 15-minute crossing seems eternal through the fog, but reaching the western bank brings overwhelming relief. Though conditions remain dire, the west bank represents security, a barrier between them and the Russians. In their minds, the West Bank was almost the motherland. The West Bank offers no mercy. Military police interrogate soldiers in barbed wire camps, stripping officers of rank for lost equipment. Dignity vanishes as illness strikes. Men soil themselves in overcrowded trucks, war reducing them to their most basic needs. Winter 1943 brings endless 12-hour shifts between frozen outposts and cramped izbas. They watch the barren landscape, firing occasionally at enemy movements. When Russians arrived, terror becomes a fortress of despair. Outnumbered 30-1, they fight not for Hitler or Reich, but from pure fear, like cornered rats. Letters from home feel surreal. A mother's advice to avoid showing off draws bitter tears. The cold claims three men, their snow-covered bodies marked by sticks and helmets. Vehicles freeze in the polar night. The gulf between home and this frozen hell grows unbridgeable, soldiers becoming unrecognizable even to themselves. By autumn 1944, Sager stands in a Polish farmyard, numb, while an officer delivers empty speeches about regrouping. The mud-covered men barely register words that have lost all meaning, unable to imagine either victory or Germany's looming defeat. The arrival of Volkssturm battalions reveals a heartbreaking sight. Elderly men and boys as young as 13, some still with school satchels, struggling with oversized equipment and newspaper-stuffed shoes. Their deployment against seasoned soldiers seems tragically futile. The retreat to Memel Port descends into chaos, with burning vehicles and thousands of civilians desperately seeking escape on too few ships. Amid constant bombardment and mass civilian casualties, soldiers survive on frozen potatoes and horse meat while refugees perish from exposure. The gravest moments come through impossible choices, abandoning wounded Hans and watching veteran Wiener make his final stand against advancing Russians, declaring, "There'll be no room for me after the war," as his comrades retreat. Escape comes when a boat rescues them from the freezing sea as they watch the Prussian coast burn. Their journey continues on the Pretoria, a former luxury ship now crowded with broken soldiers. A French officer near Mannheim discovers Sager's heritage and releases him. Returning home, he struggles with normalcy. At his hometown station, everything appears unchanged while he feels transformed. His mother walks past without recognition, fainting when she realizes it's him. He keeps his return quiet initially. Later, joining the French army provides distance from his past. Some reject him as a damned Boche, while others show compassion. His parents suppress discussion of his experiences, while others share tales of heroes on the other side. The account's power lies in its brutal honesty, showing not a hero, but a scared youth surviving. He admits to abandoning wounded comrades, participating in reprisals, stealing, and becoming desensitized to death, while maintaining enough humanity to reflect on these actions. Unlike typical war stories, Sager offers no resolution. His trauma manifests in silence, instinctive reactions to aircraft, and persistent nightmares. Even years later, certain triggers return him to the Eastern Front, war's permanent mark on its survivors.